To our economy first this morning, and to yesterday's surprising news about the possibility of a slowdown in growth, according to Financial Review reports, which would, of course, contradict the view that the economy's performing better than was expected this time last year. What especially caught our attention was the assertion that real growth was only happening in the East Coast cities, Sydney, Melbourne, and to a lesser extent Brisbane, where it was driven by property prices. In contrast, in regional areas across WA, South Australia, Queensland, and Tasmania, the unemployment rate was close to or at 10%. Stephen Anthony, who's chief economist at Industry Super Australia, told the Financial Review, "I really wonder just how much policy is framed for regional Australia and just how aware policymakers are of the circumstances of those on average or lower wages. It's extremely tight now. The capacity to meet emergencies has been reduced and we've had an extended period of stalled or falling real income and living standards, and it's starting to show." Did that sound like, we wondered, shades of the Trump phenomenon? Well, this morning I'd like to drill down a bit deeper into this idea of a city-country economic divide. I notice the Australian Today has done a big feature on the nation's new fringe dwellers, as he puts it. Joining me is Fiona Simpson, President of the National Farmers Federation, and Saul Eslake, well-known, I think, to Radio National listeners, an economist, company director, and Vice-Chancellor's Fellow at the University of Tasmania. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Saul, do you agree with this proposition that growth is essentially confined to the cities?
Not entirely, but there's a great deal of truth in it at the moment, and for the foreseeable short-term future, growth is being driven predominantly by dwelling construction, new building, which is concentrated in the big East Coast cities, and a range of services that are benefiting from the fall in the exchange rate, such as tourism and higher education. Now, higher education is obviously concentrated in the big cities, although there are some are some regional universities, particularly in Queensland, for whom foreign students are an important contributor to the economy and to the life of the regional towns, think Toowoomba, for example, or New England. And of course, tourism is very much a regional phenomenon. Doesn't benefit every region in Australia, of course, but think Queensland, for example, in tourism, significant contributor there. And there's been quite a big turnaround in, for example, the economy in Cairns as a result of the lift that the fall in the Australian dollar has given to tourism, both from overseas and from Australians holidaying in Queensland again, rather than going to what were cheaper locations in Fiji or Bali or Thailand and the like. And of course, agriculture more broadly has in many cases benefited from the combination of a weaker exchange rate, more competitive currency, and strong international prices for some agricultural commodities, like, for example, wool and beef. Dairy, on the other hand, has been very hard hit by falling prices and the decisions of the major milk processors with regard to their prices. So I think it's dangerous to generalise about regional Australia. I think there are some parts that have been left alone, left behind for a very long time, and I live in one of them in Tasmania, but there are other parts of regional Australia that have been doing very well.
Well, indeed, Fiona, some parts of the agricultural sector are just booming, aren't they? Would you read it?
Look, very much, I think, along the lines of Saul, really. We've had, obviously, the mining boom is now over, and a lot of regional Australia was riding along on that, and a lot of the growth and the employment was associated with some of those factors. Now that it's finished, we need to look to what else can drive that growth and what else can drive that employment in regional areas. And agriculture definitely has the potential. It does, you know, it benefits also from the falling dollar. We export, you know, nearly 70% now of what we actually can produce because we just can't eat enough of it in Australia. So we certainly benefit from that lower dollar. We've got some great trade agreements in place now to actually get our products from paddock to plate and across the seas to Asia. But we're lacking that strategic suite of policies that are actually going to cut costs for farmers, make our transport efficient, connect us digitally to our consumers, and grow, actually put in place some of those tools that agriculture actually really needs to grow our regions and grow our communities. And I think, Geraldine, the most interesting thing of late that's come out too is some of the figuring around the Murray-Darling Basin discussion. So we withdrew water from some of those rural and regional communities, and it has had a huge flow-on effect. So we can't have this sort of mishmash of policy around regional communities. We need a strategic government approach to grow them, and agriculture is poised to do that if we can get it right.
Look, when I was reading the Australian's piece, it struck me, and that's actually outer urban they were focusing on, you know, places like Geelong in Victoria, Armidale in Western Australia, Ipswich in Queensland. So places that have known much more prosperous times and are used to it. And the people who were there were feeling that their cities were sort of hollowed out. You know, there were tumbleweeds almost growing in parts of them. So it was as much a temperamental thing, I thought, in a sense, Fiona, with people sensing that their regions were not the in places where things were happening.
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting thought, because when you listen to the rhetoric from politicians and you listen to the talk, we do seem to be very focused on growth in cities. We do seem to be very focused towards, you know, how are we going to cater for all these people that are coming to the cities? And it's going to be a great thing if we can build our cities to accommodate all these extra millions of people. But what about quality of life? What is actually happening in some of the fringes? What's happening? My interest generally is in rural and regional areas. What's actually happening out there? And are we not missing a huge opportunity here by actually expanding the conversation? And instead of just, you know, forecasting that people are going to leave regional Australia in droves or rural and regional Australia in droves, wouldn't we be better actually looking at how we could potentially improve qualities of life by actually encouraging people to move to regional Australia, where we can have vibrant industries, vibrant transport infrastructures, we can get people to and from those areas quickly and efficiently, they'll have, you know, good employment prospects, and we as agriculturalists can actually get our produce to Asia through regional hubs. So there's lots of opportunities there, Geraldine, but it just seems that there's no suite of consistent government policy that actually looks at these sorts of options instead of actually just preparing for the millions of people to come to the city.
Saul, are you sympathetic to that argument, given, as you say, sitting in a place that's sensed that it's been left behind?
Yes, I have some sympathy. In fact, I have a lot of sympathy with the sentiment behind what Fiona says and what many other people across regional Australia say. Where I find that it gets harder is to come up with practical things that governments can do to that end that don't cost enormous amounts of money that governments will have difficulty raising in the form of increased taxation. I think there are a number of other problems behind the difficulties that many regional areas of Australia are facing that are incredibly difficult to solve. And the biggest one of those, I think, is the ageing of the population in many regional areas. And that reflects the proportion of people who are in employment, which is typically 3 to 4 percentage points less outside the capital cities as a proportion of the population than in the capital cities themselves. And there are all sorts of consequences for employment prospects that flow from that. The pattern of settlement across Australia is also very different, for example, from the United States, because Australia was, for the most part, settled after the Industrial Revolution, which tended to concentrate populations in large areas, and Australia's never really developed a lot of industries outside the major capital cities other than agriculture and in some cases tourism. For a while we had highly protected industries that some state governments used to foster being located in regional areas. Victoria in particular under Henry Bolte did that, but once the tariff barriers were stripped away, those industries decentralized to particular areas never really stood a chance of competing in global markets, and they withered away. So I think it is sort of it's important to think about what things might draw people back to regional areas. Certainly better education and health facilities are an important part of it. Better transport links are an important part of it. But ultimately, the future of most of Australia's regions are going to be intimately tied up with the fortunes of agriculture, which I think in general are on the up, with mining, which might be on the way down, and with tourism that's very sensitive to movements in the exchange rate.
Well, indeed, Fiona, Peter Bailey, we spoke to a lot of people actually in regional groups yesterday who were all active and doing things and feeling optimistic. Yep. That was the amazing thing.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, but clearly there are a whole group who are in the rural and regional areas who don't feel like that. And the NBN is often touted as the way through. It's sort of almost the highway through that links people of activist temperament and those who are less so. Is that a possibility?
Yes, no. I'm really conflicted because I am so passionate about regional Australia. I'm like Peter Bailey. I think regional Australia is a wonderful place to live. And even though, you know, I can understand some of the things that Saul says, I also disagree with it in many ways. And I think this is sort of the thinking that has in some ways got us to where we are. And a great example, Saul asked about what can governments do. And a great example is Toowoomba. Toowoomba at the moment has had a mix of private investment and public investment. And we're looking at Toowoomba now establishing itself as a real regional hub. It has a new airport that's going to be an international freight terminal. Producers in that region will be able to get their produce. They will be able to, with good digital connectivity, and this is where the NBN and...
It's already starting to happen, isn't it?
It's starting to happen now. With good digital connectivity, I could grow my produce near Toowoomba or within an hour or two of Toowoomba. I could get it to the airport. And within another hour or two, it could be in China. Now, that is right at the consumer's door. That is an opportunity that we have never had before and actually really opens the door to industry, to value-adding that produce around Toowoomba and to all sorts of other opportunities. And putting more infrastructure or health or education in regional communities is not just about increasing taxes. Yes, we need to raise funds and investment to do that. But there's if we look around the world, there's plenty of models about how we might do that and other ways that we can seek investment in our infrastructure. So, you know, George Megalogenis, Bernard Salt, we're all starting to have this conversation about a different way of thinking. And okay. I think it's time that we actually continued that and took that to Canberra and Macquarie Street and had a different look at how we might do this.
All right. Well, look, maybe we've been quite energised by this ourselves. Maybe we think we'll do a road trip next year.
Great idea.
Saturday Extra. Yes, I know. Just have to display the bean counters here. But look, thank you both very much indeed, Fiona Simpson and Saul Leslake. I really appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Thanks, Geraldine.